Welcome to the ANews podcast. This is episode 106. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org.
Editorial, video games. As a youth, back in the late 80s on family trips to our relative's house hours away, is when I first remember playing an Atari 2600 video game console. I remember thinking that a frequent highlight of these trips was being able to go play the Joust video game with my brother, while perhaps not being as excited about the other family interactions. And also, to be young and walking down to the local traveling carnival that brought along an amazing quarter arcade. While the neighboring town and city also had arcades to visit, but a bit further away. It is said that the golden age of arcade cabinets came to a crash in 1983-84 with the advent of somewhat more affordable home consoles. At that time, anywhere from 75% to 90% of arcades closed down in a very short period of time, with their now legendary cabinets filling the garbage dumps of America. Now, it kind of feels like arcades are somewhat back, to some extent at least, and it looks like a bar with food that you can go play games at, usually something corporate. Video games have become ingrained into popular culture, including in the lives of many anarchists. Last year, people who play video games or gamers spent around $138 billion USD on video games and related hardware, like the consoles and controllers. The industry for video games is expected to grow to $180 billion by 2021, largely due to mobile phone gaming, according to some market researchers. In 2018, the USA video game industry had matched that of the United States film industry on a basis of revenue, with both industries having made around $43 billion that year. To put things into some perspective of other mediums, do you even Fortnite, bro? Movie coming soon. People are not only buying and playing video games, but those lonely crowds of automation, as the Society of the Spectacle mentions, are also watching other people play them live on platforms like YouTube and Twitch, and participating as fans in giant esports competitions, with an estimated 427 million people worldwide watching some form of esports. In August of last year, the annual Dota 2 Defense of the Ancients 2 tournament had a prize pool of over 25 million, with 11 million of that going to the winning squad. The spectacle of spectator sports at its finest and most weird. And how again are we classifying what sports are? According to some news, soon we may see the Olympics become video gamified as well. Schools and other educational institutions across the USA have started to further recognize gaming as an official after-school activity, with complete regular seasons and statewide tournaments for schools to compete in. The system is gamified, and it's the sound of some kid playing Fortnite tell you live over their microphone, something along the lines of 360 no-scope, get wrecked, your mom. Fortnite just set a new record with 7.6 million concurrent players in the game at once. What does the future look like? Is it one of retirement homes filled up with people having LAN parties? A recent study revealed that they found no link between playing video games and violence, aggression in adolescence. So is this the coming utopia? I'm still not sure if I want to be a part of it. Gaming has been associated with addiction, isolation, and toxic gaming communities like online griefing, and to the next level of in-real-life swatting of other players who pwn some trolls who never learn to lose gracefully. Last September, at a Madden football video game tournament in Florida, a player who lost shot and killed two people and injured another 10 before committing suicide. Is it just a game? Video games have been covered a lot in the mainstream media, including such topics as Gamergate and the development of controversial games. Some recent controversial titles include one that puts you as a school shooter, and another that puts you as a character who commits sexual assault. On other side of things, I can imagine video games as part of learning to work together alongside friends and build some relationships apart from the more anarchist team projects, or maybe just a giant time suck. Some friends here still get together over many miles once a year or so to have a LAN party and forget about everything else in our lives for a day or two. Video game camping? Discord, mentioned earlier, is a popular text and voice communication proprietary software app largely for gamers, but also home to a wide variety of other communities, including alt-right trolls who just got doxxed, and a bunch of anarchists who also game. The largest, to my knowledge, at least online anarchist chat room is there via subreddit anarchism, or at least with over 1,000 people last time I logged on years ago. I imagine it's only grown, but perhaps imploded by now. To my surprise, John Zerzan also admitted to recently participating in some anti-civ conversations over on Discord as well. But it would be nice to see anarchists using something that isn't Discord to communicate and share with each other. The winter has been long. The PC has helped keep the room warm through the cold depths. I leave you with a haiku I wrote about my days playing Xbox Live titled Halo 3 Online. A satellite floats overhead somewhere in the world. A lone heat mat dot.
What's new this week? New writing from Jeremy, What Really Happened at FCI Milan, from Free Jeremy. Jeremy is a writer, and this is a detailed write-up of his recent harassment by an asshole cop and an uncaring bureaucracy, as well as daily life in prison in the U.S. Anarchists study this, prepare for it. It is likely in our future and definitely in the future of people we know and love. Quote, the fluorescent light immediately above the top bunk is as orange as our clothes and encrusted with toothpaste. A former prisoner had affixed paper to block, or at least dim, the light. The water is messed up in almost every cell, and blankets are on the floor to absorb the leaks. Water only dribbles out of the faucet, so plastic spoons are used to give it some pressure. In another cell, the water shoots like a geyser all the way to the door. One cell only has hot water, and one day when the hot water was down, the occupants had nothing to drink. The faulty fire alarms go off randomly, often blasting loudly for hours in the middle of the night. The power flickers and goes off a few times. The upper range is so hot, people are sweating in their boxers, while the lower range is so cold, people stay in bed under the covers all day. There is a constant argument with the COs to turn the fans and heaters either on or off, but no combination can please everybody. The only real solution is to bulldoze this old joint to the ground. The only indication of any modern renovations are the green toilets, which lock for an hour after three flushes, which most prisoners despise, unquote. Jeremy has written a book on his life, fingers crossed that it gets published.
A Workers' Party in Elections or Class Struggle, from Zabalaza.net. We mentioned this article last week when it was accredited to a different site and I gave it very short shrift. I will add here that this seems like a good faith effort, coming from a very different understanding of anarchism, to trouble the idea that anarchism slash positive fundamental change can come about through state power. It's mostly calling for more and better theory, and while anarchists who argue practicalities will always be the most vulnerable to reformist ideas, the tension between dreaming and living is always worth probing like a sore tooth. Quote, an uncritical approach to discussing the state, parties, unions, organizational structure, and the role of voting prevents the development of an adequate ideological and strategic set of conclusions about what has gone wrong in the past. It also may blind one to what has and continues to achieve real victories, unquote, and so on.
Review, Rupturing the Dialectic by Harry Cleaver, from Anarchist Writer's Blog by Anarcho. A widely read left communist reviews a Marxist author who interprets Marx about work, money, and labor theory of value. Quote, Simply put, if Cleaver were right, then Marx would not have bothered with the so-called, quote, transformation problem, unquote. It would have been irrelevant to show how labor value transformed into prices, for the imposition of labor by capital is not reflected in the exchange value of commodities denominated by labor time. Ultimately, there is a reason why most Marxists have interpreted Marx as they have, for if Marx had meant what Cleaver says he did, then he would have said so in Capital. This does not mean that Cleaver's analysis is not without merit, just that it barely counts as Marxist, if by that word we mean consistent with Marx's expressed ideas, unquote. In other news, how many angels dance on pinheads? Clearly, I'm not the one to reflect on the relevance of this review, but Wayne Price liked it.
Russia. Court extends arrest order against anarchist Azat Miftikov. From avtonom.org. Quote, the Golovinsky's court of Moscow has extended until April 7th the pre-trial detention of Moscow State University student Azat Miftikov. The court hearing was held yesterday late afternoon outside the court's official working hours, with Azat's supporters and mother forcibly removed from the courtroom. Azat was detained under suspicion of bomb-making on February 1st. He was released a week later after a brutal interrogation failed to extract confession from him. However, he was arrested immediately on a lesser charge of hooliganism. He is now charged with alleged involvement in an arson attack on the Moscow office of the ruling United Russia Party in January 2018. Azat Miftikov, a 25-year-old postgraduate mathematics student, was subjected to severe torture with beatings and electric shocks during his detention. His defense lawyer, Svetlana Sidorkina, reported that while arrested, Azat attempted suicide to avoid further interrogation. At one point during his arrest, his whereabouts were unknown to family, friends, and lawyer. Unquote. There is no information here about how to support him, but writing anarchist prisoners is always a good thing.
Against U.S. intervention in Venezuela, death to Yankee imperialism. From It's Going Down. Well, this story gets the award for most comments of the week, for sure, although most of it seems to be about Northern Ireland and whether the IRA should be supported by anarchists or not. But the idea that the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, a.k.a. RAM, has written a story about weighing in on statecraft that talks a lot about U.S. intervention, implying tacitly that Maduro is somehow awesome by default, makes me want to revoke some anarchist cards. Perhaps RAM folks are hearing from lots of anarchists who support Guaido? Perhaps people need to be reminded that we're against political leaders, full stop. This lesser evil shit confuses too many people, for real. I guess this piece could be good for informing newbies that the U.S. has a long and terrible history of intervening in Central American politics, in case anyone hasn't heard that in more detail anywhere else. Scant praise, though. Breaking news, governments are bad.
Audio and video, treble number 18, ACAB, 32-minute video. This is, per usual, a nicely put-together video of lowest common denominator politics, because who doesn't hate cops? It stars some interesting people, so maybe it's worthwhile as an introduction to folks who are worth researching. Other than that, riot porn, with no acknowledgement that they are also cops in our heads, i.e. cops are not always so fucking obvious and sometimes seem just like us. Mostly dumbed-down politics all the way around, which is frequently how things get popular, I guess. Sad face.
Anarchy Radio, March 5th, 2019. An hour. Last week got snowed out. This week they're back, and it's like they never left. The first call is brief and cute. The second call is for Kevin Tucker.
Primal Anarchy number 17, 2 hours. Reading from KT's most recent book and book recommendations, the second caller to Jay-Z's show was a request that the book titles and authors be written on the website so people can find them.
Free Radical Radio Books Podcast, Stirner Series, Episode 8. He loves everyone. Everyone. Less than three. Quote, to listen to us is to listen in on a conversation shared between friends that we do for ourselves, but also that we love to share, unquote. I've heard good things about sharing.
Anarchy Bang, introducing Episode 10, Communist Con. Quote, this week we will try to have a conversation about why anarchists are not communists, why we are often against them, and use Commune magazine as a contemporary example of how this looks. This is not about Commune being bad, but about the consequences of communist politics and practice, using Commune as an appropriate framing. What would an anarchist Commune magazine look like? Is it possible to imagine anarchist triumphalism today? Is it possible to imagine an anarchist project drawing $10,000 in Kickstarter money without being crime think? Unquote.
Malediction Audio Zine from Resonance Audio Distro, 20 minutes. A short story by Margaret Kiljoy, who gets gritty. squatting, suicide, squatting in a house of suicide, and whether hanging is a classy way to kill yourself.
Topic of the week, gatherings. A whole lot of years ago, I went to the North American Anarchist Gathering in Lawrence, Kansas. While I had been to anarchist assemblies and teach-ins locally, this was the first large and non-regional but explicitly anarchist event I'd ever been to. Being from the West Coast, I was interested to encounter anarchists from other parts of the country. This was in 2002. It wasn't for a demonstration against something. It wasn't a book fair. It wasn't a conference. It was just some intrepid young anarchist in Lawrence, fucking Kansas, deciding to do a thing to bring anarchists together. For a camping trip of sorts. Not that there was nothing programmed into the event. It was remarkably well organized. There were workshops and discussions, a queer dance party, a short film festival, skinny dippings, communal meals and cleanup, as well as autonomously organized security to deal with the cops, the threat of local Nazi skinheads, etc. While the camp did evict some individuals who were threatening other participants, the event went relatively smoothly. It was to be critical. If I was to be critical, it would be that there were way too much red and not enough green, but that was the nature of the region and the organizers at that time. Since the Lawrence North American Anarchist Gathering, there have been other gatherings like Feral Futures, Crime Think Convergences, which ended with the Smack a White Boy 2 debacle, and so on. But most of them seem to focus on bringing together a narrow sliver of the anarchist scene. I've been thinking lately of the degree of disconnection that I often experience in relation to the spheres of anarchist activity I'm involved in, and thinking about how different it felt when most things were not based on the internet, but on face-to-face interactions, correspondence by snail mail, phone calls, and so forth. I wonder what a North American anarchist gathering in 2019 would look like. I think about camping trips I've been on with friends, and some people I don't know so well. I'm thinking about sitting at a picnic table over food and sharing laughs and discussion and barbs. There are moments I feel truly engaged, as opposed to internet things and showing up for events as a depersonalized part of some mass. I also wonder if it's even possible to, or desirable to, aim for some sort of larger thing than the campfire, the picnic table, in a time where big anarchist events are the marketplace of book fairs. Would anarchists even care to get together unmediated by an economic transaction? The topic of the week is a bit open-ended. I'm wondering what others think that might look like, as well as whether it's even something viable or worthwhile. Not really because I'm interested in organizing one, I'm definitely not, but more because I'm curious what others think. What might be the benefits? What might be the dangers and challenges? What would be your vision of an anarchist gathering? No one, from nowhere, what are your thoughts?
All right. All right, well, I suppose the place to start, it kind of makes me wonder as to what the benefit, what the purpose of having an anarchist gathering is.
You mean of seeing other anarchist people in your physical presence?
No, of retreating to some space. I think this sort of sets it always up as an outdoor event, and I think that that's important for maybe a reason we can get into later, but... for retreating out into the woods to some site where you can camp and assembling with other anarchists.
So you're wondering why that's a good idea.
Right, what the benefit this person sort of sees in that is. Because I think there's maybe two different ways that I immediately see a response to that. One would be just on the simple fact of the basis of being able to meet other anarchists in a different space than a transactional one or than in what they call the anonymous mass. The other one would be
to find a space for reflection and group building. What's the word maybe I'm looking for? Not group building necessarily, but, you know, not team building, but building a coherent vision together of what you see, creating a common narrative about the place that you live and inhabit. So that would be the other benefit. Those are two things that are not necessarily, although they can happen together, they're not necessarily aiming at the same things.
Okay, as opposed to the cons, which are, like the idea, if anarchism is a thing that we share,
mm-hmm.
The open question, which to me a gathering is an answer to, is what are the consequences of that in terms of the kind of people we associate and how we associate with them? So a gathering of sorts would be an answer to that question also. An identity question. And maybe a fourth answer would be, you know, if you were an anarchist, it comes to imply that perhaps you would like to live in a world of anarchy. And perhaps, you know, before the day of days, it would be a good idea to practice a little bit of what that would mean or what that would look like. Or do we just wait until the day of days?
Yeah. I think I would want to not really approach the question of trying to live anarchy at a gathering. I mean, a gathering usually, I would say, is probably a week at most in length, perhaps they could be longer, but...
No, usually long weekends.
A week is a long time. Let's say maybe it's more realistic to think of it as 2 days bracketed by a day on either side for setup and takedown. I don't think that there's anything that could even closely resemble anarchy that you could live in that time when you're really sort of framed, hemmed in by the realities of arriving and departing being so marked out already.
Wouldn't an insurrectionary anarchism, by its very definition, say differently?
I don't know. Maybe.
Isn't insurrectionary anarchism anarchy writ upon a hostile world? Isn't it an eruption? A moment?
You know, I think that insurrectionary anarchy is your definition of that is whatever you come to with your crew of people. So I'm not going to speak on that part of it. But in terms of getting back to those two sort of distinctions that I sort of made between meeting people and creating a common vision together. I don't know that going to a gathering is the best way to meet people. It's true that it's way better than meeting people in the anonymous mass. But if you just show up to a gathering, it's very likely that... I'm making a lot of assumptions right now, but it's very likely that you would be arriving to a gathering of anarchists. Okay. Let me backtrack for a quick second. Another question. Is it an open invite or is it a closed invite?
Sure.
That's a big question. That's brought up in this as well.
Yeah.
I think an open invite gathering is something that I've never been personally interested in. An open invite gathering, yeah. It would be totally without interest for me.
Which I think most of the events that they referred to were open invite.
Yeah, and in fact, they mention how the way that gatherings have occurred, things have become, they've been picking out a narrower and narrower slice of anarchists, and I think that's kind of, again, getting to the idea that gatherings have been more and more closed.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gone to an Earth First gathering or to, what are they called, like the Rainbow Family?
Sure.
But those are what I imagine an open gathering, like, would be, and...
But they're so framed by their own context, but I get your point.
Yeah, but something where if you were just to say, hey, if you're an anarchist, like, come show up to this thing...
But the problem with that is that it then defines anarchism as a clique. The closed invite.
Oh, yeah, I don't have any issue with that, though. That's not a problem for me.
But you can imagine why it's a problem for everyone else.
Who's not in the clique?
Correct.
I mean, like... I feel like anarchism has, like, a pretty strong fuck everyone else kind of vibe, you know?
Again, you recognize it other than in your clique, that's not actually...
Yeah, totally, totally.
And let's be blunt, right? I used to be invited to many of those sort of events, but as I've lost social capital because I've actually practiced some of these values, I no longer have the social capital to be invited to some of these events, and you probably would want me there.
True. Yeah, I mean, navigating the world of sociality is, it's, I don't know what I want to say, you know, it's a difficult and...
But you don't actually believe that.
That it's difficult? I totally do believe that it's difficult.
You're willing to do the get along to get along.
Oh, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And to dress in all the socially acceptable ways of dressing. And that is basically like one of the things that people point to anarchism as being deeply unserious as a political perspective as a consequence of.
I mean, I think
in other words, it's 50 people who look and act like you do.
Yeah, but I would say that, you know, it's also 50 people who take their relationships to each other seriously enough to, you know, put like a great deal of work into that. So.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting spin. Okay. That's fine. So really what they're talking about is the end of the book fair and sort of what do we do next?
Okay. So I think this end of the book fair thing is totally overblown. I don't think book fairs are coming to an end or have gotten worse or anything of the sort. I mean, discussions at book fairs have always sucked. You, like, go to a discussion at a book fair, some idiot shows up who, like, has no connection to the people who are speaking, has no connection to the people who are, to many of the other groups who are in the room, and sucks up all the air asking questions that are not grounded in a shared discussion. That's almost necessarily the case, because when you have a large group of people who don't know each other assembling, you don't have a common narrative that you've been building together. There's no way to locate a question within a narrative that's shared and meaningful to other people. Whereas when you go to a closed gathering, you're going to a gathering in which either you're about to construct a narrative together, and which will frame every discussion that you're about to have, or will gradually come to frame them. Or you're going to a gathering with people with whom you already share a narrative, and then the discussions that you're going to have are always located within that narrative in a way which makes it always relevant. I've been kind of holding on to saying this as well, and I feel like this is a bit of a non sequitur, maybe slightly not related, but I think one of the important things about going to a gathering in the woods with people that are, you know, vouched for to whatever extent that to whatever degree you put meaning into vouches, which is an open question. I've seen people come alive with their ideas, be able to share ideas in a way that I've never seen it possible in the city, either out of, you know, a paranoia or just out of feeling suddenly that they're not in someone else's space, not in someone else's home, for instance, not as trapped by those things. And you're still definitely trapped by anarchist sociality. Absolutely. But, I mean, just being outside of worrying whether or not your apartment is bugged, it can really open some people up.
Which seems like so ridiculous.
Given the
fact that, at least in the U.S. context, infiltrators are far more likely to be the source of intelligence to the state. But okay, that's
absolutely
fine.
I mean, again, it's really I think it's a perception thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe that was a bit of a non sequitur though. So getting back to what we were just saying,
sure.
Which was about closed gatherings, meeting people. So the problem with book fairs. So yeah, book fairs are still great at attracting large groups of people to them and then providing a space for socializing around that. They still, I think, are a relatively good way to come into contact with other anarchists. And they certainly provide an excellent opportunity to meet anarchists coming from different cities. But it's still very difficult to come to something, you know, to come to something without already having, without already being known by people. Even a book fair, you will find that to a large extent, it is also still closed. The open part of the book fair tends to be frivolous and mediated by economic transactions. and not particularly interesting. I think I went to one book fair in my life where I didn't know people there and had an extremely boring time. The closed dimension of a book fair is mediated by sociality, which seems to be becoming like, you know, the great specter of this conversation.
I talked about it once.
Oh, well, I think I brought it up too, though. You know, again, well, getting access,
rather important to you, yes.
Getting access to the closed aspects of a book fair will be difficult, if not impossible, if you don't already know people. But that's where meaningful connections will be made around that event. And it's sort of like...
Well, I think it's worth mentioning that some of the other aspects, in other words, the non-conspiratorial aspects of meeting an open room of people, first of all, that's how people get invited into the smaller circles. There's also a question as to whether or not many of these conspiracies end up meaning anything. In other words, if you don't do anything other than sort of talk to your cool friends about cool things in a cool-looking way, whether or not that's anarchism. But I will say, and just to put a point on it, we have had a closed invite post-left anarchist. We've had four or five of them now on the West Coast over the past 2 to 3 years, and they have been very pleasant. But, of course, it's pleasant to get together with, you know, a couple dozen of your friends.
Well, one place that I would disagree with you on is the idea that you meet people at larger open events, and then that's how you find your way into small crews.
It is how people find their way into small crews.
In my personal experience, that's not really the case. In my experience, what happens is you begin with a small crew who begin to become interested in these kinds of ideas.
How did you meet them again?
They simply are the people who surround you as you become political.
Okay.
Once you begin to do political things, you become noticed by other people who are doing political things. There's, you know, you begin looking for open projects to become involved in because they line up with what you're interested in.
So it isn't open gatherings that you're for. You're for open projects.
Well, there have to be some open projects. I mean, there's always some that are like the, you know, the top level. The public facing is usually what I would say. Public facing projects. And then, yeah, you just build relations of friendship between your group and other groups. And then those relations of friendship are what, like, slowly pull you closer and closer to closed groupings.
How does this differ or not differ from, I guess, what we would call the French understanding of friendship?
Would you want to, like, give a working definition of what that could be?
No, I don't know. I'm assuming that you know more than I do because it sounds like that's what you're talking about, but I just don't understand.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'm using friendship as to sort of mean affinity. Uh-huh. In some sense.
Right.
But affinity, I think, frequently gets talked about as though it were like much more political in its dimension, whereas like friendship might be standing in as an almost like anti-political affinity sense. It's like
generous to your position.
It's not just affinity, it's like affinity and then also the people that you spend your life around. Or that you spend your life around, who are at the events that you're interested in going to, who are, you know,
thank you,
more encompassing.
Thank you very much for this.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This episode was sound edited by Rosinante. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Rosinante. We thank Aragorn and Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on eNews.